There's a quiet crisis happening with men today. Stress they don't talk about. Isolation they don't admit to. A sense of purpose that slips away in the busiest of getting through. Now, today's guest has spent nearly 50 years learning what it takes to lead, to persevere, and to rebuild from the ground up in one of the toughest industries there is. And he's turned a Texas ranch into something remarkable, a place where veterans, young people, and families come to just to slow down, reconnect, and rediscover what really matters. His message is for anyone who has walked through a hard season and wondered, what will happen? What will happen on the other side? You know, who will they become? You know, and my guest today is the kind of man whose life is his message. Victor Breton is a 8th-generation Texan, a construction executive with nearly 50 years in the industry, a rancher, an international sportsman, and the author of The Man That I Would Become. He founded Breton Texan Ranch, which has grown into far more than just a hunting centered on faith, family, and mentorship. It's a conservation and giving back in area where he has donated more than 60 hunts to support veterans, youth, and families in need. Victor, welcome to the show. I'm so excited to have you here.
Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate being here.
Now, let's start with where you learned who you were, because it wasn't in a classroom. You spent nearly 50 years on the concrete construction industry, you know, building a career and character from the ground up. Like, what did that world teach you about leadership and responsibility and perseverance that you couldn't have learned anywhere else?
I can't give 100% credit to construction, even though it was spent most of my time doing it. But my mom, was raising two kids by herself, and I was the oldest. And you'd watch her and her perseverance and her dedication and the things she knew she had to do for us. So I'd say I was grounded there first, just watching her and understanding that this is what you have to do in life, you know, so you need to go forward. Yeah. And then construction, like you talked about, you know, it's a tough field. You know, it's back when I was growing up, it was, you know, who basically could yell at you the loudest and make you feel like you're the smallest was really the boss. And you know, so evolution through time teaches you that that's not necessarily the way you lead, but that's what construction is, right? You know, we're manly men. We're supposed to go take care of all this stuff. And, you know, at the end of the day, we kind of learned that leadership's not that. So we evolved, and I am grateful that I have evolved.
That's wonderful. And what does real leadership under pressure actually look like based on what you've lived?
So the first thing, you know, that I tell all the guys is, you know, we have to make decisions. If we procrastinate, don't make a decision, schedule gets delayed, costs more money, owner gets mad, there's all kind of things. So pressure means you have to make decisions, you know, and part of that pressure is just make the best decision you can, ask as many people as you can, Google whatever, but, you know, you just have to make educated decisions. And I think sometimes people fold under pressure because they don't make a decision. And I'm not saying the decision is right. I'm just saying that it was probably the least expensive decision you could make than not making one at all.
Right. And you care deeply about something a lot of people are afraid to talk about. And I think it needs to be said out loud. You talk about men, stress, isolation, and resilience. You know, what are you trying, you know, what are you seeing actually in men today that are so many that are struggling silently, carrying the stress and a sense of isolation they never talk about?
You know, when we're young, right, the first thing you remember is you know, get off the ground, stop crying, you're going to be okay. So even though we don't intentionally teach our kids to, hey, shut up and don't say anything, that's kind of what we're telling them, right? No different than my mom put me in football when I was at 5 and I'm supposed to be 6, and you still remember the coach grabbing you by the face mask and said, get your butt back in there and wipe your tears up, right?
Yeah.
So it's not meant to really be mean. It's, you know, men do need to toughen up. And I'm sorry, we have responsibility. We take care of our families. We protect them. We do have to have that role. I understand that. But what I've learned through life is, though, if you have that kind of a role, you're not empathetic. You really don't care. And so those things go hard. I have a belief, 10s and 1s. God gave you 10. That makes you a 1 on the other side. If right. I can take the hill and march and everybody's going to follow me, I'm probably not really empathetic at all, right? Just get right out of my way. So finding that balance, I think, in life is critical for men. And most men don't find that balance. They really don't, because, and here's what I'm going to tell you. The first time a man opens up to another man and that man shuts him down, you're done. That man will never open up again. So we have to understand that we need to be as good of a listener as we are a talker.
I agree. That's a great point. Now, why do you think so many men feel this way? Like, and what do they need most that they're not getting?
I think conversation. You know, I'm not a psychologist at all, but I do understand whether it's a 10-step or 12-step. I'm not sure what the drug and alcohol programs are nowadays. But what's the very first step you have to make? I have to talk and admit I have a problem. Well, if a man doesn't talk to another man, which is hard to do, and say, hey, Johnny, you know, I've really got this problem over here. Would you sit down and listen to me?
Yeah.
That's tough for us to do, number one, and it's tough for another man to open up and go, hey, yeah, well, Pete, why don't you tell me what's going on?
Yeah.
So we have to talk. Because, you know, what's the favorite thing we talk about between men and women? I come home, my wife says, what'd y'all talk about? Nothing. You can't tell me. Nope. I just sat there, had a fishing pole in my hand, and we had a really good time, you know? So men have to learn how to talk, and men need to learn how to listen to other men. Because when a man talks, normally it's not just because he wants to jibber jabber about what happened yesterday. It's normally something serious, and we really need to open our ears and listen.
Right. I agree. Now, your story isn't one of avoiding hardship. It's one of being shaped by it. Like, you speak about faith through, you know, your hard seasons and building purpose after adversity. Can you share with us, you know, what some of those own hard seasons, you know, have taught you?
Well, the one thing I just want to, again, back to my mom, you know, thank her for grounding me in faith. You know, I was in a church-based school since I was kindergarten up until sixth grade, and she decided I probably need to be mainstream, you know. So faith was grounded. That doesn't mean I didn't drift, right? So I went through some marriages, right? A lot my fault, because at the end of the day, I really didn't know how to give my heart. I knew how to be a man. I knew how to protect my family. I knew how to provide. I knew how to strive for something, but I didn't really have that other half. So faith is what brought me through, whether I was aware of it at that second in time, right? When I thought I was down, next thing you know, you kind of get picked up and you get pushed in a direction.
Yeah.
Some of the conversations, you know, you and I were having before we went on, you know, air was that I didn't realize the path I was on until sometimes it takes you a while to get there. Then you look up and go, oh, God, thank you. I didn't realize you were really pushing me in this direction. So I just think you have to believe, because you're going to go through trials and tribulations. You're going to think you can't make it. But I still go back to the saying, God will never put anything on top of you that you can't handle. But you have to persevere to get through it.
Yes, that's very true. Now, how did faith carry you through? And how does, you know, a person begin to rebuild a sense of purpose after they've been through something that has knocked them down?
Well, back from Texas, we got to go to that old saying, right? Cowboy up. You got bucked off the horse, dust your pants off and get back up, big boy. You know, and you have to have that in life. You have a choice. Yes and no. No sometimes is good. Yes is sometimes is good. But you always have two choices. So if you're down there on the ground, you got two choices. I'm going to stay on the ground. I'm going to waller in whatever I'm in, or I'm going to go, there's something better. I know there is. I can do this. Let's get up and try again. And I'm not saying it might not take you 10 times, but you can't lay there. You got to know there is something better for you, and you just have to struggle through it, and it will happen.
Yes. I like that answer. If you're like a man walking through, and I'm talking to the listeners right now, if you're a man walking through a hard season, or you love one who is, this conversation is one that you're going to want to hear all the way through. Now, follow the Advisor podcast right now. Every week, we bring you the leaders and the builders who show us what real resilience, purpose, and real strength looks like. Now, what, you know, you built goes so far beyond a ranch. And this is the part where your story really moves me the most. Your ranch became a place of healing for veterans dealing with post-traumatic stress disorder, for young people needing mentorship, for families in hard times. Why does the outdoors have such a powerful effect on people, that ability to slow them down, you know, to rebuild relationships and to open up honest conversations?
Yeah, for me, it's like we were in the Metroplex for, you know, most of our life. And part of the ranch was going to be a retirement, you know, for my wife and I. And, you know, we're outdoorsmen. We're my wife's my huntress. We go together, and it was going to be kind of a family thing, you know. So getting out there and looking at the stars, and I'm not saying stars, I'm talking galaxies. You know, you just go, oh, what is that star? There's peace and there's quiet, right? You sit there and it's tranquil. You can hear yourself think. There's not cars running up and down the road. Then look at the animals. Then the wildlife starts coming out. And here's a fawn. You know, here's a little baby. Here's a mom taking care of it. You know, here's the dad strutting around with his antlers on his head. There is just, to me, such a peace and a calm to be out in the outdoors. And when you bring people here, what do? You go sit by the campfire. You stare at the fire. You have a conversation. You know, you get up and you go look at the stars. There is just something in God's creations that gives you that peace and that tranquility to be able to sit and relax and maybe just get your thoughts together about why am I feeling this way or what's going on, or have that conversation with somebody because we are in that mood just to sit and relax and to chill, and all the stress kind of disappears a little bit.
Yeah. And what have you witnessed happen to people out there that stay with you?
Well, a couple of different things. Like when we have the young Christian group that's come out, like we just had our Ram camp where we had 10 young men out, and we had our first girls camp that we came out, right? There's nothing better than to sit out there and watch a 10-year-old boy give his life to Christ. You know, and again, why here? You know, why didn't he do it in church? There's just something about the outdoors, and he's around his buddies, and they're encouraging him, right? And they sit around and have their Bible studies. And then you watch the military come in and the combat veterans, and you'll hear them say, well, I didn't know you were there. Well, I was there at the same time. You know, in the military, they're never alone. There's two or more. Mm-hmm. So you go out in the world, like you said, about being adjusted, and all of a sudden now you're the man and you go figure it out, and there's nobody there with you. Yeah. So now the camaraderie starts, right? And now the poking starts and the making fun of, and well, you missed that shot. How come you did that? I thought you were in the Army. Well, the Navy's better than them. You watch that camaraderie and the poking coming, and it's just the world starts disappearing. You know, they can actually feel like they're themselves. And I've had some guides that were struggling, you know, with PTSD, and you watch them gradually overcome and knowing that there's somebody there to listen. So back to what we talked about, men have got to listen to other men. And if they do that, when you talk, you kind of start healing. You just get some of these things off your chest.
Yeah. Now, your book title says it all, The Man That I Would Become. Now, that's really the question underneath all of this. Like, we don't choose a lot of what happens to us, but we do have a say in who we become through it. So what does it take to become the man or the person that you were meant to be, especially after adversity?
I think you have to understand there's a bigger calling. You know, it's not just necessarily I've got a good job and I've got a decent pay and I got a new car and I get to go take my wife on a vacation and the kids. It's so much deeper than that. And I don't think sometimes we dig deep enough to find the real answers. And like I told you, I think I was looking for a long time and it probably hit me in the face. Yeah. But at least you're looking, you know, Try to find the answer. Right. You know, there is something out there. And I do believe as human beings, we're not here basically to be mean. We're really supposed to help each other.
Yeah.
And that could mean just moral support. That doesn't mean financially. That just means, hey, I'm giving you a call today. And how are you doing? We hadn't talked in a long time. Are you doing okay?
Yeah.
So getting that down and having that message across to me is your bigger meaning, your bigger understanding, right? I just got through putting a newsletter out in LinkedIn, and it basically talked about my second life. What was my second life? Knowing that I'm now here to give back.
Right.
Didn't know that my first 50 years. I understand that on whatever I've got left that I'm still here to give back. So hopefully that's a bigger lesson people are trying to strive and find.
I love that. And for someone listening who feels stuck or isolated or unsure of their purpose, what's the first step toward becoming who they want to be?
So I listened to I don't know what you call it, documentary, maybe, about there was actors who were in their 80s and 90s, right?
Yeah.
And they ask the same question. So why do you think you've lived as long as you have, you know, blah, blah, blah. There was two really simple answers that resonated. One, you have to have something to love. Two, you have to have a reason to get up every morning. So I always say we make life so complicated that, well, let's look over and see what the Joneses have, or Pete or Fred, or no, let's look at what's inside. Are you happy? And if not, then you have to change it, right? My mentor told me, have you turned yourself inside out and really took a look at yourself? And if you like it, great, keep making it better. And if you don't, you have to change it. Yeah. So find what makes you happy. Try to make people happy while you're making yourself happy. And I think you'll find you'll be so much more happier in the world.
Yeah, for sure. Now, you built a career, a ranch, and a mission around all the responsibility and faith and perseverance and lifting others up. You know, so when you look back on all of it, like, what do you most want people to understand about hardship, about purpose, and about the kind of person that they're capable of becoming?
Number one, there's always light at the end of the storm. It doesn't stay black forever. Even in Alaska, if it's 4 months, there's still going to be light at the end of the tunnel, right?
Yeah.
So you have to keep going. You know it's going to get better. You're in a rough spot. I think we all have to understand what the bottom is before you really can appreciate where you were, yeah. Right? If we were just all bred that life is so good and everything's great, where's the appreciation? Where's the understanding? Where's the knowledge that you've gained? You don't gain anything. The knowledge that I have gained is not from my success. The knowledge that I've gained is from all the failures, all the adversities, all the things I failed at taught me lessons about being persistent, being able to trust my faith, and being able to go forward knowing that I'm knocked down, but I am going to get back up.
I love that. I love that. Now, with your book, you know, what motivated you to want to write your book? Because a lot of times, you know, we just don't go to write a book. There is something that really pushes us to want to share the message that we're sharing. For you, what was the main motivation behind writing the book? What were you hoping to accomplish?
You know, it was really just kind of for my grandkids and their kids after I'm gone. I lost my mom about 3 or 4 years ago, and the legacy kind of disappeared. If you think about it, when's the last time you went to a family reunion?
Right.
Well, you don't, because that was our grandparents that drugged us over when we were kids, right?
Yeah.
To the family reunion.
Very true.
So I felt like I was losing my legacy, you know, and I wanted my kids to understand what I persevered through, what I went through, the faith that I carried, and how you get from point A to point B without giving up. So that's kind of what it started.
Yeah.
And as I started getting into it and honestly having to have confessions to myself, because when you're writing a memoir, you have two choices, right? You lie or you tell the truth.
Yeah.
So you had to really look yourself in the eye and go, oh, I'm really going to have to acknowledge this, aren't I? Right?
Yeah.
So then it kind of led to some things that made me more aware. You know, we talked about the 22 or 23 suicides, you know, from PTSD or from combat veterans. And then all of a sudden somebody opened up to my eyes, there's 50 in construction.
Yeah.
So it's like we're double. And then I started thinking about stress and all that. So the book to me then became, okay, maybe this can be a knowledge base, because it's not about the success. That's not what this is about. It's about look at the journey, look at the travels, look at the perseverance, and how do we get there, right? And maybe somebody can pick something up and go, oh, that makes sense to me, or maybe I can do that. So the book all of a sudden to me transformed into something bigger than I never thought it would be, because really, I'm not an author. I don't like English. I'm good at math. Don't like English. So it's like, why am I an author? So there's a short, long story about how we got there.
I love that. I love that. Now, where can people find your book?
So we're on most of the major publications. You know, of course, Amazon is where you can find it. If you would just look at Victor Breding or The Man That I Would Become, it would show up. But we're on Barnes & Noble's and pretty much all of the rest of them as well, though.
I love it. And can you tell us about, you know, your different services that you provide, and a little about the ranch and how people can get involved with that, and anything else that you have that you'd love to share?
Sure. So I'd like to give a couple of attaboys to people that do a lot more than I do. And that's Gordon Melton. He's Hunting with Soldiers. We met him. So I'll back up just a little bit. So the ranch, again, we talked about was retirement. So my daughter and I and a couple others, we always go to outdoor shows because, again, we're outdoorsmen. And my daughter came back just excited. She had a couple of flyers in her hand. She goes, Dad, you got to talk to these folks. And she's dragging me over to them, right? Well, one was Gordon Melton with Hunting with Soldiers that for 20 years has been helping combat veterans with PTSD. And then she drugged me over to Casey Allen, which is state director of Cross Trail Outfitters, which is a Christian faith outdoor group. So those two changed my life as it relates to the ranch.
Right.
Because as I started interacting with them and starting helping them and starting doing the donated hunts and all that,
yeah,
that's where that bigger calling kind of came in and I realized. So that's one. You can help them either through contacting me or contacting Gordon or contacting Casey if you'd like to help them, a great organization. At Breading Texan Ranch, what you do when you come for us is to help us donate back to those missions.
Yeah.
Right, our ranch is not just about taking in and making a bunch of money. That's not it. It's about being able to supply those donations that we do for people in need. You know, we've got a terminally ill, a young man that's fixing to come up. So we try to do whatever we can for everybody. And I would say the rest of it is, you know, you support the book, you support the ranch. We've got some speaking engagements that we go out and do, try to motivate people either through faith or through leadership. So I appreciate you asking and letting me be able to share that.
You're very welcome. I love it. And for the people out there listening to this conversation, if there are a couple of things that you want them to walk away with and really remember from this conversation, what would be some important takeaways that you'd like them to get from our conversation today?
One, there's always light at the end of the tunnel. Don't give up. Suicide's not an option. It's not. You know, there's people that love you. You're leaving them behind. You're leaving so many things that you're causing in their life that you really don't understand. And it's not worth it, number one. And number two, you are worth it. You are worth being on this earth and you need to stay here. So reach out for help. That would be one. The other part is you do have to persevere, right? God's not just going to come say, here it is on a silver platter. Take it, Victor. This is what you need to do.
Yeah.
You have to persevere and he will help. So if you just go through your perseverance, go through your faith, understand that there is a light at the end of the tunnel, it'll all be okay.
I like that. I like that a lot. I think it's really important too. Like you made some really important facts, you know, that you stated. You know, one was that a lot of times men are told to suck it up and to be a man. And a lot of times because of that, they grow up and they repress their emotions and they don't share with other people. And when you're going through, you know, life, especially if you have pain, whether it's emotional or physical pain, and veterans have a very high suicide rate as well, you know, we have to learn at some point to let down those walls around our heart and then be able to trust another individual to share with and to ask for help and to ask for support, because there are so many people out there that can relate to them because they're not the only ones, you know, and people want to help. People want to listen. There are many people out there that aren't going to be judgmental. And there's so many people out there that have been through similar situations. They just don't talk about it. And even if they don't have the same similar situations, we all have emotions. We all can relate to those emotions. So I think it's so important if someone is getting those suicidal thoughts or they're just feeling, what is my purpose? Why am I here? You know, I just don't like being who I am, or I don't love being in the life that I am, to reach out and ask for that support and to get help. And I think what you're doing with your ranch is great because they can go there, they can share, they're being accepted, they're being loved, they're being cared for. And there are people there, like you said, that to listen, you know, and I think it's really important that people, you know, to get out of their shell and to realize that they're not being judged and to go to places where they can share. Because, you know, when we build things inside, it only gets worse to the point where we become so numb that we don't even know how we feel anymore. And, you know, when it comes to suicide, you know, it doesn't solve anything and it just hurts all the people around. And so I really thank you for helping those people. And I hope people who are listening, if they're going through something in life, to reach out and get the support and the love they need, because there are people out there that want to help, that care, and that, you know, that want to, you know, lend their hand to you. And so I think what you're doing is wonderful. I think, you know, I really love the fact that you've reached out to so many different groups, you know, that matter, you know, and that could help people change lives.
Well, thank you. I think it's a cause all of us take up in one way or another, you know, and I appreciate what you're saying about telling them just not giving up. You know, giving up is not an option. It's just not. And there is light out there. I promise you, you know, I'm living proof. You get to a point in time in a hotel room, you know, when you're away from your kids and your family, you wonder, why am I here?
Right.
There is a light at the end of the tunnel. Just persevere. You'll get there.
Yes, 100%. 100%. And if people want to find you, where can they go to find you?
So if you would, if you'd Google Breading Texan Ranch, or it's either B-Tex, that's our DBA, you could Google me, Victor Breading. We're on all the social media, on LinkedIn. You'll find we've got a great website that has everything from our social media to the book to what we do on the ranch, our giving, and all the causes that we do.
I love it. I love it. And for all the listeners out there, it turns out that the hard seasons don't just happen to us. They shape us. And with the right foundation, faith and perseverance, and people who help us reconnect, they can build into something who we were always meant to be. And Victor has lived that truth and has built a place that helps others live it too. Today, he reminded us all that no matter what we walk through, we still have a say in the person that we become. And once again, I want to just thank you so much, and you know, for being here, for sharing your story, for sharing, you know, how you've used your life and your legacy to turn and help others. So I want to thank you for being the person that you are and for helping others. And tell listeners once again where they can find your book, The Man That I Would Become, and learn more about the ranch again so they don't forget.
Thank you so much. Yeah, if you just get on Amazon, you could do either Victor Breading or The Man That I Would Become. You can Google my name or Google Breading Texan Ranch. We'll take you to the website, lead you to the book and all the charities and everything that we support.
I love it. And if this conversation spoke to you, share it with someone, especially a man in your life who needs a reminder that the best chapter can still be ahead. Thank you so much, Victor. I really appreciate you being here today. I thank you for everything that you're doing. I think you're a wonderful individual with so much to give. And I just want to say thank you for what you're doing. You're just a remarkable individual. And I thank you for being the person that you are.
Thank you, ma'am. I really appreciate being on your show and letting me share it.
You're very welcome. Well, I hope to have you back, and I hope you have a great day today.
Thank you. You too.
All right. Have a nice day.